I started watching the American Crime Scene, Gianni Versace assassination. I started watching it.
Right.
And the first two episodes, I was so disturbed. That one episode, the one where he was with the guy and he put the tape over his face and he was dancing around in his bikini underwear. I'm like, you know what? This is too disturbing. I can't watch this anymore. And then after a couple of days, I'm like, you know what? I think I'm hooked. I think I need to continue to watch this. But I couldn't wait every week till it came on, and I was so sad when it was over. So I started reading. I started with the audio book, Your Vulgar Favors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just on to chapter 6, but it's talking about his mother and his father, and that
right,
they definitely
he had
were there. But, oh my God.
Yeah, he had a very dysfunctional family and a really rough upbringing. But it was interesting because when I first started following the story way before he killed Versace, because I had seen his picture in the New York Daily News on a Sunday, and he was in a black tie that said "Social Butterfly Wanted for 4 Murders," and it was he was a graduate of this exclusive school in California, and since I grew up in California, I knew the school, and I thought, this isn't the usual serial killer suspect. So I got the assignment from Vanity Fair, and I was following all of his first 4 murders, and we were literally hours away from the printing press with the whole story being finished and fact-checked, edited, everything, and when the news came that he had killed Versace, which caused us to snatch it back from the printers, open it all up again. But I was the only person who would ever, except for his friends, who knew that he had actually met Versace because it came out in my earlier reporting. So that's the kind of background of how it started.
Did you actually ever, you never met him in person, did you?
Oh, no. He was on the lam when I first started doing the story. But, mm-hmm. I got a couple of very strange phone calls in the middle of the night. I believe he knew I was on the story, and Vanity Fair was one of his favorite magazines, and he really just, completely vacuumed up all kinds of information about celebrities and the rich and a lot of the kind of people that were in Vanity Fair. And so I think he had heard that I was on the case, and one night I got this really when my late husband, Tim Russert, was alive, unfortunately, the phone was on his side of the bed, and he answered. And it was this sort of voice that I had been told he had a kind of an unmistakable voice, and it was that kind of voice saying, "Is Maureen North there? Is Maureen North there?" And then Tim, of course, starts asking him who he is, which he shouldn't have done that. And then mm-hmm. the guy hung up. But anyway, I think he might have. But as far as meeting him, no, because he was on the lam in Miami from the time he did his fourth murder, so it was a couple of months, and then he killed Versace.
Oh my God, that just must have been chilling, especially since he called your house.
Yeah, but
oh
I,
my God.
But I never felt, I always thought he was far away, and then, of course, in Miami, people were thrown into a panic because he finally killed himself. He was never really apprehended by the police, and so. After Versace was killed, there was about a week period before he killed himself.
Yeah, I remember what was going on. In fact, when he killed the cemetery worker, that cemetery worker is only about 20 miles from where we live.
Wow.
It's right over the, we're in New Jersey, in southern New Jersey. Right. And he was in New Jersey, too, but right over in Delaware,
very close
to Delaware.
Right.
Sweetsboro, which is close to here. I remember when it was going on. It was mesmerizing on just to watch it. It was scary and interesting and just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a very unusual case, and he had his first 4 victims before Versace were all people, except for the cemetery worker whom he killed for his car, for his truck. The other victims were people that he knew. And apparently knew Lee Miglin in Chicago, but certainly the first two were very close to him at one point. So they all sort of, except for the cemetery worker, the victims kind of represented people, symbols of different kinds of people in his life. And of course,
the murders were so brutal. Oh my God, with the hammer?
Yeah, they were what the experts, you know, I spoke to many, many, many people. I must have interviewed 400 people for the book and read all a 1,000 pages of all kinds of FBI records and police records and everything. And they told me that the way that the people were killed were really crimes of deep, deep anger and personalized killing. It wasn't just, you know, shooting from afar. It was really just trying to be as brutal and harmful as possible.
So what he did to Lee Miglin was horrible. Oh, my
mm-hmm.
God.
I mean, it was.
It was just, this is, you got to meet the stars from the show. Darren Criss,
yeah.
he was phenomenal.
Isn't he great? You know, I was fascinated while the series was running, and of course you can still see it, I mean, you can still stream it and everything. I was fascinated because, first of all, Darren Criss is half Filipino, the same way Andrew Cunanan was. And when I first visited the set and saw Darren Criss, my mouth flew open because he looks so much like all the pictures that I had ever seen of Andrew Cunanan. There was just this striking resemblance. And then I thought, people kept coming up to me, and they very much had the reaction that you said you first had. I can't take this. This is disturbing. And I thought, with all the violence on television and in film, with all the brutality, why is this so much more disturbing to people than, you know, stuff they you can get a hold of on a daily basis? And I think it's really because of the brilliance of Darren Criss's portrayal of Cunanan, because he had this combination of total charisma and total evil at the same time, and it was off-putting, right?
It was. He was unbelievable. He really just, you believed him. He looked very gay, and he's not gay in person.
No,
apparently he's engaged.
Yes, he is. He is. I've met his fiance. Yes, he is. They want to start a piano bar. Go ahead.
So cute. No, but he's very, you know, just, and what was his name? Edgar Ramirez, who played Gianni Versace.
Oh, yeah. He's a marvelous. He's a Venezuelan actor who now lives in Buenos Aires. And he also, the way he came, he also, his makeup made him look so much like Versace. I thought it was amazing.
It was. It was an excellent series, and it should win some awards. Now, did they take anything that was to make anything really different than was in your book? Because I didn't finish reading the book yet.
Well, there are some things, because the series is based on. It's not supposed to be a complete factual reenactment.
Right.
There was a lot of stuff, but all the scenes where if Andrew is talking to anybody he murdered, for example, alone with the victims or among the victims, we don't know what went on because there are no witnesses to that, right?
So that part
is imagined. The Versace dynamic, I did not write about the Versace family. I was writing about Cunanan and the killings. And so, I mean, I wrote about them insofar as how it affected the investigation and what happened and all that. And about their business, but not so that part also. But there were many, many, many details in it that you couldn't believe were really true, but they were true. For example, a fragment of the bullet that killed Versace passed right through him and hit a dove that then was killed.
I know, I felt so bad for the dove.
and you know, fell at his feet. So then now everybody started saying, oh, that's a mafia hit because they leave doves or dead birds and bodies on, you know, stuff like that that absolutely wasn't at all true. There were things that were very true that happened that the conspiracies that came as a result of them were not. But just the biggest thing that wasn't in the book that was about was Jeff Trail, who was also from Illinois, who was his best friend at one time and the first person that he died. That he killed, excuse me. They have him leaving. He was an Annapolis graduate, and they have him leaving the Navy because of being gay, and and the fact that he was. They say because he got involved in this brutal beating of somebody gay in the Navy. That did not happen. So that was to me the farthest afield that they went from what actually happened.
I have to ask, why did he kill Versace?
many theories about that. My theory, and I think I probably am on the right track, is that he had a very deep resentment, anger, and envy at the life that Versace had. Versace was openly gay. He had a boyfriend that he loved, that he'd been with a long time. Andrew could not really form a relationship with anybody. And Versace was rich and famous and had any boy he wanted any night, and he was in a very glamorous world, and he represented everything that Cunanan wanted to be in many ways. But at the same time, Cunanan never was willing to stick with anything or put in the work to try to do it. And so I think that he got into drugs, he got into S&M pornography, he got crystal meth, he got into a lot of bad stuff that were feeding, outrageous things in his head. And that coupled with his anger and his resentment and rejection by a couple of his first two victims kind of were in the process of totally rejecting him, and that he just couldn't take it. And that is what his revenge was that I personally believe he killed to be famous because he couldn't get it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, he kind of, his willingness to do anything to be famous really is an early harbinger of people, you know, like the Kardashians who do a sex tape, who start out being with a sex tape, or other people in our life. I mean, but this idea that you don't have to be famous, you don't have to do anything of accomplishment to become famous. He was a precursor of that.
But do you think
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, do you think that his plan was to kill all these people and then kill himself, or do you think he thought maybe he could get away?
I'm not sure, but I wonder if he thought that he might be able to escape at some point. I think a lot of times with serial killers, I was told that they never want the police to get them. A lot of times, for example, he was hiding in plain sight, and the police did a very poor job. They missed opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to catch him. And the Chicago police, for example, didn't even issue a real police report and wouldn't cooperate with any other jurisdictions because they were protecting the reputation of Lee Miglin. So all along the way, he was hiding in plain sight, and he considered himself smarter than they were. And so when people like that are cornered, they'd rather take their own life, I was told by the experts, rather than have the control be surrendered to the police.
Well, I don't know. All I have to say is when I watched it, the show, I was very disturbed, too. And I think it was because I knew that it was real. I mean, it really happened. So I think that, like Lisa said, she was disturbed. And I was, too. But I think it's because of that, you know.
Yes,
and
it's
it was
because
so
of that, but
brutal.
It's also, it was very brutal, and it's because of that, but it's also because the acting was so good. For example, Judith Light, who plays Marilyn Miglin, was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and a lot of that dialogue was not taken from my book, but was taken from actually things that Marilyn Miglin actually said on television, and she had self-published her own book quite a few years after the murders. And so they, you know, the dialogue was real from that point of view.
Well, who do you think was crazier, his mother or his father? They both were nuts in their own way. The poor guy never had a chance. The mother was clingy.
No, the mother was really clinically mentally ill. The mother was really on meds, and I interviewed both parents, and the mother, I felt the mother was very victimized and brutally treated by both her husband and by Andrew. And and she really was clinically diagnosed and on a lot of different meds. And then the father had these, you know, was a crook and had these delusions of grandeur and gave him, you know, they both sort of competed for his attention and spoiled him and treated him differently than the the other siblings in the family. They gave him the master bedroom of their house, and his father bought all these clothes and cars and all this stuff, and basically made him feel like he was the most privileged little prince, that he really could just go through life like that. And his father obviously defrauded was a stockbroker who was dishonest, and then he, without telling the family, he sold the family house out, literally out from under them, and then ran away to the Philippines with the law right on his heels. So they were just, here's Andrew thinking that he was this adored prince of a child, and his father gave him everything, and then the father just escapes without saying goodbye and does that to the family. So then Andrew ran to the Philippines to try to, and then he finds his father living in this really just sort of very sort of reduced poverty-like circumstances, and his whole, I think, impression and everything, probably many of the things his father had told him were, he realized were complete lies. And so I think that had a pretty shattering effect on him. It caused him to have to drop out of college, and he had always lied, and he was voted in high school to be the least, you know, the least forgotten, the most remembered or least forgotten, when that whole thing fell apart, it was crushing to him.
But do you think, I mean, he did turn out to be, he turned out to be a murderer and a serial killer.
Right.
Do you think all these horrible things that happened to him in his childhood really changed him into that serial killer, or that he was always someone who had that in him?
There are lots of different clues along the way. We don't know. He, way before the serial killer thing came along, he was obsessed with American Psycho, the movie. I chronicle it, the book, and in Vulgar Favors, you see different times along the way where his father taught him how to shoot a gun, and he would like make these weird remarks at bars or to friends. Well, if I were in that circumstance, I'd take a gun and shoot five people. You know, he said stuff like that, and he brought a gun to school once when he was at Bishop. So I interviewed so many people that he grew up with, and he would, you know, he had his mother bring him a lobster salad and a lobster lunch to, and he dressed up like Prince Charles and had another little girl dress up like Princess Diana because he wanted her to go with him to Hollywood where they could become movie stars. This is in the eighth grade. So there's lots of stuff that...
Wow, that's weird. That's so weird.
It was a weird book to write. It was actually, you know, you could imagine, here I am going into all these dive bars and... foam dances, and I mean, covering the waterfront. It was pretty funny.
Oh gosh!
Yeah.
Well,
did you interview any of the older gentlemen that
yes.
were his sugar daddies?
Yes, there was this. Yes, I did. I did. There was just a. It was really interesting because you could go all the way from sort of like these sort of drug dealer addict. Hustlers, and you could go all the way up and sort of to high society, and he was able to carry on conversations, and he was able to dress well and look good and very witty, so he was able to move in whatever circle he wanted to move, and I tried to find as many as I could who knew him, and yes, he did. I did interview some of them, and some of them thought he was a decorator, some of them, you know, we'd have all different stories for different people, and then a lot of his friends in San Diego, where he was living before he started all this killing, they knew he was lying. They knew he was just sort of full of it, but he was so amusing to them and so witty that and he bought all the drinks and he bought dinner and probably got it from drug dealing, the money, and prostitution, and he was the life of the party, so they put up with it. But then there came a time when he was, like, just sort of unraveling and sinking deeper and deeper and kind of being unhappy and then that's when it all started to go bad.
Well, I must say, it really was a tremendous show. I didn't have a chance to read the book or listen to the book like
Lisa.
Well,
you can still read the book or listen to the book.
I'm definitely going to, definitely. Because, I look forward to watching the next episode because it was like, oh, I have to see what's happening. Mm-hmm. I have to see it. Mm-hmm. I have to see it.
It was, it was beautifully produced, and mm-hmm. I thought everything was done in a very sort of top way in terms of production values, et cetera, and casting
mm-hmm.
and acting.
Absolutely.